that food. Ready? Fire.
Yeah. Only one. In your book, you mentioned that for deep buried defilements that have been buried for a long time and are very deep, sometimes you need not vipassana jnana, but alone, but you need marga jnana. Well, what is marga jnana, please?
Huh?
Marga jnana. Yeah. Marga.
Oh, marga jnana.
Yeah. For deep.
Yeah, but the only deep defilement it removes is wrong view. And then at different stages, different levels of wrong view. But it's not the other defilements we have, like trauma and stuff like that in childhood and all that.
Well, I like that.
Well,
I
think, yeah.
Maganyana is, it removes wrong, a very, very deep-rooted wrong view, which is the sense that
Upama.
There are people and I and stuff like that, yeah.
Upama. So. Well, why? Anupiya, yeah.
ไปกับพลาญาณไอ้แม่กับพลาไม่ไม่เนี่ยจําไม่ถูกอันนี้บาพูดเลยใช่มั้ยอันนี้หาก็แม่เนี่ยไอ้แม่กับพลาไม่ไม่เนี่ยจําไม่ถูกอันนี้บาพูดเลยใช่มั้ยแต่แม่อันนี้หาก็แม่กับพลาญาณไอ้แม่กับพลาไม่ไม่เนี่ยจําไม่ถูกอันนี้บาพูดเลยใช่มั้ยแต่แม่อันนี้หาก็แม่กับพลาญาณไอ้แม่กับพลาไม่ไม่เนี่ยจําไม่ถูกอันนี้บาพูดเลยใช่มั้ยแต่แม่อันนี้หาก็แม่กับพลาญาณไอ้แม่กับพลาไม่ไม่เนี่ยจําไม่ถูกอันนี้บาพูดเลยใช่มั our life's traumas and stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. That sort of thing can be uprooted with a vipassana jnana.
Vipassana jnana, yeah.
But mega jnana removes defilements that we are born with, like our sakaya ditti and all that. Yeah.
Upodeshari
nada. It's the things that keep us going in samsara. It's the reason we're not enlightened. It takes away those defilements, you know.
How is it practiced in a simple way? How is it practiced different from vipassana?
Oh no. The practice of vipassana leads to that supposed to lead to
the last
step. I thought it might be purification of deep difficulties from birth.
You can't choose to, because these defilements they're called anusya, hidden. You can't choose to observe them because they cannot be seen. But when that mega jnana arises, it sees it and uproots it at the same time. Yeah.
Thank you, I understand. Thank you.
Okay. You explained the characteristic of disappointment in relation. If you're disappointed, what is present? Is it craving? Or when you feel disappointment?
What has been your experience? What have you noticed about the experience of disappointment?
I haven't been able to pinpoint it, that's why I'm asking you.
So a disappointment or elation.
You worked hard for something and you've succeeded. You feel high. But what is that? Is that craving? Is that...
characteristic dia pale de tbyo me de tu phit taw aw lo ni le lo so lo tu a chi lo ma ya le ma song za ta lo a jaw me ni da le
hu phit taw phit de phit de a ba yin tu ya ma di sai ku sai ku a yin chi ta ma yin lo sai ku chi ta ma tu ye da ba wa ko phit ni na ma phit ni de sai ku le phit ni da ba yin di ti lo ya le ha ba di
he says just start with what you can. It's not so much a point for him to tell you what characteristics to expect, because then you look for that and you won't notice something that you might find out for yourself.
He says,
so he gives you an example. Yeah. For example, he says, we know greed. We know when we are feeling greedy. He says, but at first all we can recognize is that there's greed. But we don't really know any of its specific characteristics and all that. And then if we keep watching, he says, we might notice, for example, he gives an example. He says, when we want to eat something, we want to take something, and we feel it's not enough. We feel it's not enough. We want some more. And that's a characteristic of greed. Greed never feels anything is enough. It always thinks there should be more. So then we keep putting, and after a while when we look at our plate, there's too much. These are things you must discover on your own. Yeah. And if he tells you things, then you'll only see those things, but it won't be the pleasant surprise of discovery that you get from your own.
Yeah.
There are signs that that are peculiar to each emotion and anger wants to destroy, wants to put away, doesn't want to see this anymore, that's why people kill other people. Finish them off. That's very gross anger. Yesterday night, Sierra was talking about compassion and anger, dosa, and a lot of people don't seem to realize that dosa is not just anger. In English, the word anger is something quite gross, but dosa is everything to very subtle degree. So if you're sad, there's also dosa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're disappointed, there's also dosa. When there is a not wanting something, there's dosa. So yeah.
Upset.
Just give me a second.
Is anusya kilesa and upakilesa same thing or are they different?
Upakileta. Anuti akileta and upakileta.
Upakileta
hua hula. Nyan bale.
No. Akileta se bale ya. Upakileta nyenyunyo se gule upakileta. Taku gale kwa katanao jola.
Oh, era upakileta.
Yeah, upakileta.
He says there are... Help me, Bhante. There are 10 things that make the mind...
There's a sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya called the Upakilesa Sutta, which is the 10...
Actually, Upakilesa
is framing. For framing.
He
says there are 10, you know, 10 things that they
misunderstand
what it sullies, contaminates. That's the one. The practice of insight, practice of vipassana, and there are 10 things that are explained. And you know, parts of them are like seeing light when you're sitting, and having very a sense of great clarity, lightness, all this sort of thing. All these are normal. So the first 9 are fine. They're actually normal things that happen in the practice of vipassana. It's on the way, yeah. It's part of the path. The danger is when these, and the 10th one explains the danger, is when we get attached to one of these 9. We think it's something special. Some people think that means we've become enlightened. And when you attach to one of the other 9, that's the whole. They're hidden. They are potential potentials are
ถ้าไปเลยชื่อเลยแต่การได้ที่จะเชิงลงสิว่าโมเอราพอแต่ชั่วโมงถ้าไปเลยชื่อเลยแต่การได้ที่จะเชิงลงสิว่าโมเอราพอแต่ชั่วโมงถ้าไปเลยชื่อเลยแต่การได้ที่จะเชิงลงสิว่าโมเอราพอแต่ชั่วโมงถ้าไปเลยชื่อเลยแต่การได้ที่จะเชิงลงสิว่าโมเอราพอแต่ชั่วโมงถ้าไปเลยชื่อเลยแต่การได้ที่จะเชิงลงสิว่าโมเอราพอแต่ชั่วโมงถ้าไปเลยชื่อเลยแต่การได้ที่จะเชิงลงสิว่าโมเอราพอแต่ชั่วโมงถ้าไปเลยชื่อเลยแต่การได้ที่จะเชิงลงสิว่าโมเอ
It's the use of the word potential, because Seattle said that those seers are potential defilement. I said they're not potential because the defilement is already that powerful. It's just it's hidden. We can't note it directly because it's out. We don't have the ability to see
but
that.
But you can potentially reserve it.
It is already there.
Yeah, but they're potential or not. Till then it's hidden there.
No, they're already there. We can't see it, even though it's there. We have the kaideti all the time. It doesn't have the potential to arise. It's there, but we don't see it.
No, no. Say there are problems. The kaideti is still missing. I say machine.
Machine.
Machine. I say machine.
That kaideti say machine.
Ma poong. That kaideti ma loba ma loba say machine. That
kaideti.
Loba. Loba. Machine.
Machine.
I'm not tired. I'm not tired. Loba poong.
So there are the types of defilements that I was thinking about, and then he says, but greed and anger, lobha and dosa, also exist in our minds as anusyas, and these are as potentials, because we don't always have anger in our mind. We don't always have lobha or dosa in our mind. We might be in a moment of neutrality. At that time, all lobha and dosa remain in our minds as a potential that can arise. So that's the anusya. So the same with all the others, right? And it's not just the defilements, you know, it could be feelings of metta, karuna, all these are, we have everything as potentials in the mind, jealousy, etc. And sometimes they arise in the mind.
Well, I was thinking about the hidden agenda behind what we do and think. So say like somebody say gives a big donation to Telethon.
To what?
You know, we have thing called Telethon here where you can... at a surface level it looks like altruism.
Yes.
But underlying he wants his name mentioned on television.
Right? Yes, yeah.
So there's hidden agenda behind what you do.
Yeah,
though it's
motivations.
Not, so it's not obvious when you see it. No, even the person.
Even motivations.
So, tuap yora, umat itu luar, luar esobazu. Tenara luar, ho ya ya luar, macam pih pih bawa pih kudo sesi luar. Nama itu luar ya, nama itu je no luar sih.
That
motivation. Yeah, so Seattle was saying, you know, there's three levels of how the defilements are in our mind. So they can be hidden or potential, then they arise in the mind. And then they lead to action, verbal and or
power or
action. Yeah. So it's when they arise in the mind. It's called, I think, Pariyutana. So it's when they arise in the mind. It's at that stage that we can actually observe the defilements. If they're hidden, we can't observe them at that time.
And it seems like we all have blind spots, and it's often easier to see other people's blind spots than it is our own.
Yes.
So how do we bring more honesty to our own practice?
To cut the He says, think of it as not enough understanding. We haven't been able to see that view of ourselves. It's like a lack of skill, a lack of ability to see. We are able to recognize all those defilements in ourselves that we have the ability to see, and there are subtler levels that we haven't quite got a grip on yet. Yeah.
But if you have a very good Dharma friend, you can invite them to tell you.
He says even the blind spot that others see in us, he says, are still quite gross. He says, yes, at a at that level, yes, someone can tell you some behavior of yours that you never thought was unwholesome, but if it annoys people or something like that. He said, but that's still gross. And then there are subtler things that neither they see nor you see. Right. And we can become able to see that. For example, he says yogis practice meditation, and they don't really know, the motivations that they bring into the practice, why the practice is becoming better or worse and stuff like that. But the meditation teacher, he's been watching his mind a long time. He knows the patterns of the mind. So when a yogi comes and says, oh, my practice is not good, and he already knows greed was at work or something, or he was... He says, and sometimes it's even difficult to point out to the yogi they have that motivation or defilement or even sometimes wisdom in their practice. Sometimes we don't recognize our own wisdom. And this always reminds me of something that happened in CIMC in America. This lady was talking about her experience. She tries to practice at home, and when she gets home, she's tired. She says she tries to be aware of the tiredness, and then, but it's hard because, she's tired, and it's difficult to be mindful. And I was translating this to the teacher. I said, she said it's hard. She's tired, and she's trying to be mindful. And he said, I hadn't finished. And he said, tell her to stop trying to make the tiredness go away. And I said, she didn't say that. And he said, stop trying to make the tiredness go away. And I couldn't assume that this is what the yogi was trying to do, because she hadn't said that. And I was like, wait, listen to the end. He's like, tell her to, he's getting more impatient. Tell her to, stop trying to make the tiredness go away. I looked at it, and I stopped. And everybody was seeing this exchange, and I said to the lady, are you trying to make the tiredness go away? And then I told them about the exchange, and I said, I couldn't assume that was what she had to think, but he already knew that was what she was trying to do. And that's why she found it difficult to try to be mindful of the tiredness. Mm. Yeah.
So is that what, when we're told to watch for our intention, like, I can sometimes, if I'm mindful while I'm eating, I can watch my intention to go for the food. Mm. But when I'm in sitting meditation, what are the more subtle things you watch for in terms of your intention? How can you see? Is it just greed, or just being aware of greed, or being aware of aversion, or...?
It's easier to know intention when we're moving. Now, tiny thing,
intention to intention
He says when in the sitting meditation yesterday, he says intentions are. In the whole body, he says, we're full of these urges to do, to whatever. And he just introduced that just so we might notice when there is an urge to do something, some part of our body. When we're going to do some gross movement, of course it's very obvious, but we can notice it in sitting as well.
เออโยคีเดียวสันติอึดเลยไม่ตั๊ดสาว่าเรียนลงไปเนี่ยมันมีหมู่ท้ายเนี่ยป่ะไอ้ท่านนี่มันตื่นบ่ตัวเส้นน่ะอู้โลกตะโกโลกไปปัดไปเส้นน่ะตัวนี้ตอนเรียนแล้วสิเส้นน่ะเส้นน่ะเนี่ยมันไม่ใช่ไปอันนี้ต้องตัดที่ทําอืมที่บาลูไม่ใช่ไปทําไอ้มันอินเดเซตูสามีตัวตะโกโลกก็พอล่ะกว่าแลที่ทาแล้วทีโลท้ายขึ้นน่ะแล้วข้าวดูเล่นนี่ขึ้นน่ะแล้วตะโกโลกก็ล่ะ
He said there was a yogi he had told to just go and find all the intentions possible. The yogi was sitting in meditation, couldn't find any intentions. There's no intention to move as such. And then, but the yogi was persistent. He stuck his whole body, one part at a time, to find an intention. Then he settled on his eyes, and he was thinking, why are my eyes closed? And then it's like, because he had intended to keep it closed. And then suddenly, every other intention in the body was so obvious. He had the intention to keep his hands like, so the intention to be still. Mm. Intention to keep the waist straight.
Some people, they put like this.
Huh? Some people's hands are
like this. Some people like this. Some people are like this.
So when we're not moving, we don't realize the intention continues to function, to keep us in that position.
Breathing, breathing, I see. Breathing always intention to go. Joseph Goldstein told me something the other day, I had the same problem. Yeah, so he said when you are reaching something, say you are reaching a cup, stop, to pause, and then breathe, to pause, and then continue the movement, and then it suddenly came to me that it's an urge.
But it's also the urge to be still, not just the urge to move.
So,
like, he's just holding it. He's not moving. He's not going to move. Is there an intention? Because of the intention, it remains held. Yeah? So the intention to remain. So there's energy there to keep it in that position. So, wind, you know, the wind element is called the Chittajao
vibe. Yeah,
it's a mentally produced wind element. He says some people move in their meditation, and then when you ask them why, they say, oh, the wind is moving them. But they believe that it's wind, so they keep letting themselves move, but it doesn't look very good. So you have to realize you want to move. The mind is causing movement. Without the mind, your body can't move.
What controls this intention?
It can be a defilement, it can be a kusala mind.
Neutral
intentions like just blink your eyes, breathe, unless you're having asthma.
If you say seeing like as seeing for nature, but before seeing as seeing have something before happen like intuition, did you not understand? If seeing like seeing,
seeing like seeing,
yeah,
seeing like seeing,
but before seeing, before we seeing like seeing, something happen before like intuition.
Intuition. I know the word intuition. What intuition did you have? I know she's saying intuition, but she's got to tell us the story. It's not enough to say there was an intuition. because intuition is a hazy thing that anybody can have in any different way. But what was the specific intuition that you had?
I don't know what we call on. I often see something very silent and seeing. But
seeing.
I just see somehow
before seeing.
You are saying that you had a sense that you were going to see it and then you saw it.
Yeah.
Hello?
He said it could be imagination. He said, for example, he says somebody might keep imagining that they're going to see a ghost and they open the toilet door and then they see a headless man there. But it's just their imagination. You're saying that you saw something like after thinking about it. So you saw a picture of something and after that you saw that thing. Is that what you're saying? Or maybe in your mind you thought this person is coming and then after that the person arrives.
Like something happened and seen.
What thing?
You have to explain it specifically. Example? It's not enough to tell me in general.
I don't know how to, but I have many times for seeing very happening.
You must tell us one of the stories.
One example.
Yeah. Like a premonition for my wife,
Yes. So is that like that? For his
Yes. Someone rings the phone, ring, mm-hmm. and you know who it's going to be before you pick it up.
Oh, but who's that?
Hello. Yes, Jeff.
I think it's like a premonition, maybe.
But she said no. She said it's not a premonition. I just need
someone.
On the pathway, and some people sit down or far away.
Okay.
But sometimes suddenly I see the people sit down far away. Something like this.
Could you repeat that slowly? You were walking.
When I walk up and down,
Yes.
And people sit on the hill, very far from my vision.
Yes.
But sometimes suddenly I see people
sitting
far
there.
Away. Yeah.
But without looking.
But you can see those people.
Yeah.
You without looking.
No.
She can actually see those people. So you can see that they're sitting there far away, and then it feels like what you see is very close to you.
Yes.
That's it.
But without looking, I don't look in.
No, because the mind has remembered the image and made it very clear. Tua di lobia, tu lasham ni re. Ho wei malu re thai ni tu mia re. Ho ne ne mia lam mia re. Hame tu lasham ni tu lo bachi lo no. Yo ti ji bwa ga ne dai pya kho la ra. Elo
ni. Oh, ai tu ma mi ba lu bo. Ma mi memory le bo.
So that's the memory. That's the memory of what the mind saw. You're not trying to remember this, but the mind has done its work, and because there's samadhi, then boom, it just becomes very clear in front of you. Yeah. That's not intuition.
But she said without looking.
She's already seen it.
No,
she
I didn't see
it
before.
Not seen before.
Suddenly, I see.
You said the people were sitting there.
No, not seen before.
Without looking.
So how do you know the people are there?
She's asking me.
So that is just an image because the people are already there.
Do you see the people?
Yes.
She sees the people up. She sees the image, then she looks and sees the people to check.
He said this can happen sometimes. He said it's again just that the mind sees something and then afterwards it sees the
actual.
So then in that way, it's intuition. explained at the nature of just mind functioning. So something hasn't arisen at the mind, at the eye door, but it has already arisen at the mind door. And then you see it. Yes?
Just while you're on that topic, an experience that I have relatively frequently is, I think it's someone I haven't thought of for a year or more, and then they telephone.
Yeah.
And it happens quite regularly.
Yeah, well, regularly.
What is the Buddhist explanation for that?
I don't know if there's a Buddhist explanation. Siano said not to take it all too seriously. He says there are many episodes like this that can happen to us, and there are equally many number of non-intuitive experiences that we have. We don't remember all the many times that we made the wrong guess at who called, or didn't see something ahead, or didn't know someone was going to call. We remember all the times that we did, because they're so strange, it's so uncanny. But he says we mustn't give too much importance to it, because we will, if we start believing that we have it, and then start to try and guess which times we are going to be intuitive and all. He says, I mean, in Burma there are people who gone crazy because they got too much into this stuff, you know, trying to build
it.
There was a lady who had a premonition that her son was going to die, and 6 months later he died. But it traumatized her so much that every negative thought that came into her mind, she began to be anxious it was going to come true. She went completely berserk, and she ended up coming to the center. That's why he says we don't give it too much importance. Think of it as a coincidence. It's as a coincidence. He says he has other yogis who have gone crazy because they thought it was a wonderful thing to be able to see ahead, and then, you know, the sense of the ego sort of going out of control also.
The explanation I give myself is that our mind is not contained within
ourselves.
It can be universal, and it can. It's not just contained here, it's more than that.
Yeah, he says the mind does have power. It's just the power of the mind, especially particularly when there's good concentration and stuff in the mind. So, but don't overestimate it either.
Is the mind connected to other minds? Like, here, it's mind
separate.
But sometimes, you know, what she's saying, you're saying don't pay too much attention, but, like, sometimes if people concentrate a lot here, someone else feels it here, minds that are stronger can affect minds that are weaker. So it's like, you know, people talking about the aura of Sai Baba over his village and stuff like that. So minds that are more powerful have very powerful influencing effect on other minds. Those who have very strong samadhi is a very attractive quality. So when someone has very strong samadhi, you notice people want to follow them. They want to do what they say. Yes. Sometimes they don't even have to speak, you know. People want to be near them. They want to be their followers, you know. They want to do what this person wants them to do. It's just, that sort of attractive, very, very strong attractive quality can be.
So the sending metta or people praying together, is it because of the combined energy
There are, you know, each individual mind has a power, and when many people gather together, you know, to put their mind towards one object, then that power is magnified.
No, lower did it not only put it. I power did not lower did it. I feel it.
He says, normal powers of mind, anger or greed, come into a space where you have a lot of greedy people together, you can feel the energy. Go into a space where there's a lot of angry people together, you can feel the energy that's already. So it's the same with positive minds, you know, a place where there's a lot of people doing metta together, you can feel the difference. A lot of people doing, having wisdom, you know, and you can feel the difference.
In the same afternoon, Simon mentioned about wholesome awareness. In the guided meditation.
Oh, wholesome awareness. Yeah. I said it that way. He means the awareness must be without defilements. Greedy when you're aware, trying to make something happen. Aversion in your awareness, trying to make something not happen.
But in the moment you're aware of greed, there's no greed. I mean, there's no abusala.
Some people can be aware of aversion with aversion, and then aware of that aversion with aversion, and then aware of that.
So, meditation alone, defilement of toilet.
Yeah, some people, you know, do that. They're meditating, they're being aware, and there's some subtle defilement that is motivating them, you know, constantly, you know. You have a retreat, you're hoping to get something in the retreat, very subtle, you know. Yeah, so it's just that. Being aware with, meditating with greed or aversion. Yeah.
So, kusala is now a lot getting translated as skillful, because wholesome has this moral connotation.
Yes, good.
So,
you know, skillful. Skillful.
If you think about it as skillful or unskillful.
So skillful awareness, that's
what's
that's
better.
Yes, that's much better. Thank you,
Mandy. Bhamaru Chao, you're doing a shame.
Yeah. In Burmese, it sounds so much easier to understand.
Because for many people, they can't practice, they are not peaceful, very suffering. And that's why I'm reminding. I think I need to know that the answer is to get to skip over here.
Yes. But he says the main thing he is trying to convey is that the mind that is this. Practicing the awareness must be a skillful awareness. So before you just become mindful, he says you have to check.
I just have a question related to what I've talked about before. Like, I'm here because I need to look at my defilements. And it's hard work, and that's why I try to practice. But I also can see like cause and effect. But there is cause and effect in society, and it's not, I don't believe it's all. Some of it may be from a previous life, but some of it is societally caused, and we're part of society. So if we don't look at the cause and effect of the policies, etc., on society. We're just looking internally also, but can we look at it in a broader perspective as a Buddhist? I think there'd be a great power for good if people who were solidly looking at themselves then looked at society and looked at the root causes in society, because some people are so poor that they can't. You know, that it just is enough for them to survive, to have roof and shelter. So, I don't know, just looking at the root causes in ourselves and in society, does, is that a Buddhist perspective or not?
သူကိလေသာကိုနားလည်ကြလို့ဒါရီနဲ့သူကဘာလို့ပို့တာသူရောခက်လက်ခက်တယ်ဒါပေမဲ့အချောင်းကျိုးတွေမှာတဲ့ခုမှအချောင်းကျိုးတွေရှိတယ်ကဘာကြီးမှာလည်းအချောင်းကျိုးတွေရှိတယ်ကဘာမှာလူပုဂ္ဂိုလ်တတ်တော့မတွေ့မကြည့်အောင်ပါတဲ့ဥပမာအကြံရင်းခက်တယ်ဥပမာဥပဒေတွေအယောရာတွေဒလေတွေအဲ့လိုမျိုးတွေက ดีไล่หน่าเลยรู้เลยรู้เลยว่าดูเรียนเนเนเนเนทันเยอะมาอะเฟคชิเลยดาคอสเนเฟคเนาะตุดเลนทงจาหมดอุดิจาดิโลหาฤชิเลยกว่าพุทธบาตาอนิเนพุทธบาตาเนี่ยอมายอ่ะโกสิทธิ์ละจิเลยโกสิทธิ์ละมันกันทาနိုင်ပြီးတော့ဒီဟာတွေကိုပြုတ်ပြင်ဖို့ကြိုးစားပြီးပို့ချုံးမရှိဘူးလား
Yes,
he said, I mean, it's all about wisdom. Whether it's individually or as a group, you know, at whatever level of society, you know, at the individual level up to the policymakers level, whatever level, he says, when there's wisdom, he says the mind understands what is right and what is wrong. What is beneficial and what is not. Then the mind will do what is beneficial and skillful and good. And that will benefit everybody depending on the level of influence
ท่านสุเนี่ยเนี่ยเราเปล่าป้องเนี่ยยกเสร็จมีลาจองๆนี้มีจองๆไปอ๋อคาจองเนี่ยดีกาจองๆไปชื่ออ่ะไข่หน้าก่อนชื่อตะเพิ่งสิตริทามิล่ะเออเราก็บ่รู้ก็ก้าวเลยแล้วสิ้นทามิล่ะเนี่ยเฮ้ยเนี่ยเตียไข่มาว่าอ่าเราก็ฟอลโลว์ไล่มาแล้วตะงามนี่ไหนมาแล้วไข่นี้มาซ้าเลยซ้าก็เราก็จองเปล่าเลยส่วนนี้ไล่จองเปล่าเลยไม่สึกช้าเนี่ยกูสิบ่ทําบ่รู้เนี่ยมึงเนี่ยกูสึกช้าน่ะไอ้ยาที่จองเนี่ยเปล่าเล 但是做生意没，当然做生意办公室都差不多不用说了。
Yeah, so at each of our own levels, he says, you know, we can make a difference once we have the wisdom. He said, when he was practicing at home, you know, he every Sunday his big family of 10 brothers and sisters would gather in mom's house and they would eat. And then they would talk. They come to visit their parents, yeah, because they're all married, except for his sister. Yeah, maybe one. Anyway, then they would eat and talk, and you know, he said they would chatter about the latest cars, movie stars, you know, things like that. And he used to just sit and listen because he was just being mindful. He would just sit and listen, watch what was going on, and then realize this is really quite a waste of time. Then he thought about what could be done. So, and then slowly an idea formed in his head. One day he said, why don't we meditate together? All of them had meditated before because his father used to bring them all to the monastery. So they said, oh yeah, let's meditate. So they all sat, you know, 15 minutes initially, you know, then they would eat and then have their, and then after a while, more, you know, of the idea crystallized. So they were sitting more regularly, you know, every time, and then he, after eating, then he would suggest a discussion, or during the meal around the table, he would suggest a discussion. Then they would start talking about life, whether they were happy, unhappy, what made them happy.
He
would start asking. He would ask his, well, mostly brothers, he only one sister. One by one, he'd say, how do you feel about your life? He said, do you feel satisfied with your life? He said, they would give answers once at 50-50, once at 70-30, once I'm not satisfied with my life at all. So, but they had never thought about it. They just sort of go through life, time passes by, they've never given any thought to how they were living their own life. So then, you know, the questions then led to, you know, one to the other, week after week, you know. So if you're not happy with life, how do you make yourself happy? How do we deal with it? And then, you know, the bringing of the Dharma into the discussions. And then it became a regular Dharma discussion. He said at that time he was very powerful in his family. Because at that time everybody knew how he had been practicing continuously. So in such a dedicated way. Whenever he said something, it made a difference to them. They didn't dispute it because obviously he had been watching it a lot longer than they had. There was some authority. His brother from America, who's it now? When he comes to visit in Burma, he sweats. I mean, it's hot in Burma, so whenever he sweats, he takes off his watch and he puts it down. And he's not very mindful, so he put it down here and there. And the teacher's not really looking out for it, but he's mindful. So as he passes by, he notices a watch here and notices a watch there. It's not that he tries to remember it, but he notices where, and then there's a chair that he always sits at in the house, he said, so he would be there sometime. And then he'll see his brother bobbing around, and then, what's wrong? I can't find my watch. And he said, oh, it's in the kitchen, And so first day, second day, it was like, oh, it's in the bedroom on the left side. And then the third day, the brother had asked him, he was like, so his brother, because they knew he'd been practicing so much, his brother thought that he had some psychic power and he could see. Actually, he had just noticed where the watch was. Every time he saw the watch, you know, his mind would just say, oh, this is Aungji's watch. And then he would know that the mind had said that. So then, you know, it's just there. So,
yeah.
So when we recognize the mind that, like, comments on our experience, he says, then the memory of it, the remembering. Sometimes the mind repeats it 2-3 times, then it gets more and more strong. So if you want to remember something, just repeat it many times, you know.
I wonder if Sayadaw would just talk about teachers, Dhamma teachers, relationship with Dhamma teachers, how that might change over a course of training. It's an issue for a lot of people. What is an appropriate relationship with a teacher? Sometimes, you know, like in the beginning of my spiritual life, I wanted a teacher would tell me everything. I didn't have to think for myself. And then that matured into something else where I just more or less wanted an advisor.
Yeah.
And now it's a sort of pick and choose kind of thing.
Yeah.
But my guess is that it was sort of different for him.
Relationship really. အဲ့ဒါအချိန်နဲ့ဘယ်လိုပြောင်းသွားလဲတပြုတ်ဘယ်လိုသူကဘယ်ဥပမာသူဆိုရင်သူအဆောက်အအုံဆိုရင်သူဆရာသူအကောင်လုံးတင်ပေးတယ်သူဘာမှစဉ်းစားစရာမလိုအင်စထရက်ရှင်ပဲလိုက်တာပြီးတော့သူအားထုတ်မှုတော်တော်ကောင်းလာတော့သူအဲ့လောက်ကြီးအင်စထရက်ရှင်မလိုတော့ဟိုတစ်ခါတလေဟိုလိုအပ်မှာပဲသူကပြီးတော့ဆရာကိုမေးတာရှိတယ်နောက်ပိုင်းကျတော့အဲ့လိုမျိုးမေးတာတော့မဟုတ်တစ်ခါလေဆရာကိုတစ်ခုမေးဆရာဒီလ That's how it is. I mean, in his relationship with his teacher as well, he said, yes, initially, you don't know anything about, like, he didn't know anything about Dharma or meditation, and he relies on his teacher for information, guidance, instructions. He says, once his own practice became quite strong and skillful, he didn't ask his teacher so much advice about the practice. If he had some difficulties, he would try to find his own way first. Mm. And then if it was really difficult, then he'd go and see whether he could get a different perspective from his teacher. Yeah, so, yeah, it's like that. He felt, you know, he appreciated any sort of contact with his teacher. He said even if they weren't talking about his friend, about anything specifically about himself, his teacher was like a storehouse of Dharma information.
Yeah.
And so anything he said, you know, you could learn something from. He said, you know, there were times when, you know, he would see his teacher every evening. He'd give him a massage, and then he'd just talk about everything under the sun. And then, you know, his teacher would say one or two things, and he said, whatever came out of him, you know, it was like, you know, the sounding of a bell, you know, whatever came out of him. And then he says, later on, he said, you know, when he was teaching us yogis and all that, then he would go and tell his teacher about it every evening. And after a while, he says, his teacher might be busy or something, and then his teacher would say to him, tell me if there's something important. So there was not a necessity to tell him everything about all the yogis anymore. And then he says, then if he would go there once in a while, his teacher would give him his full attention because he knows he's come because it's important.
Right.
Yeah, so the relationship changed. Sometimes he says he goes to be with his teacher is busy with someone else or something else. And he says, it's not that he even has a conversation with him, just watching the way his teacher deals with people and situations, the things he chooses to do, where he sits and how he sits, all these things, everything speaks to him. He says once he was talking to his teacher, and his teacher sits like this, and maybe Sena sits down there and talks to him. And then he was very busy involved in talking to the teacher, and then at one point he says his teacher suddenly says, you know, AB is coming. Sena was shocked. He was like, he wondered, how did he know? Then he heard the sound of a car running outside. He realized his teacher had already heard the car. And he said that's when it struck him how his teacher must have this like bird's eye view of everything that's going on. He's never involved in something so fully to the exclusion of everything else.
Mm.
He knows everything that's going on in his environment, and he acknowledges the presence of, you know, of whatever comes up as well. And then he wondered a bit further. He thought, then yes, there's a car running outside. How did he know AB is coming? You know, and then he realized, you know, after some thought, I mean, he knows who it is, that it's a particular sound of a particular car. And every time this sound comes of this car, this person arrives. So it's not that his teacher's, you know, but his teacher's got this. He sits there in his kuti every day, doing the same thing every
day.
He says there are many people who think Srivan Seattle is psychic, but he says he knows Srivan Seattle is not psychic, but he has a lot of wisdom. There's a lot of wisdom on the ground. And because of his wisdom, he knows, he understands things.
Psychic is
He says, if it was just psychic, he wouldn't find it so impressive as the wisdom at work. Yeah.
And so
yeah,
the students,
yeah, him are sort of like, sure, there's somebody else. Yeah.
When we make a decision, we use our wisdom, but every experience is new.
Yes.
And how can we balance wisdom and judgment? Yeah. Or prejudice.
Go. Some people, people are dying. Go ma. Go. Yang dong yang ni. Yang mana tak kahli tu jom ya. Tete. Kalau kau belolo, yang ni prejudice lah. Ujian dia no. Person sinzar. Oh, on day sinzar. Lupa ma. Tiup dia. Atawa de. Kelari ya. Manaji de. Erar ya prejudice de. Another judgment about the whole of Pima, Ben, who are Loban and now Lamila, Ben, and the judgment about Arrow, who are
they? Sashimi, Pinya, Ben, you kill as well. To the power of Pinya, Ben, you kill as a Loban, but Pinna is not here. Sashimi is in his mind, Pinya people see it. Pinna, I think. I'm the poor information, Shima, eh?
So, Ben, you tell me.
The Google told me the child of Yan, my child, information like soup. I was in it. I was in it. I was in me on that information soup. Two kids on you say, two little girls.
He says, how does wisdom arise? Wisdom arises essentially when the mind.
You were not a kid, I say, man.
When the mind is free of the hindrances. When the mind is free of the hindrances. When there are less defilements in the mind. When it's calmer. And of course, yeah, so, and when, that's when they're able to function as well, wisdom. He says, and he says, for every situation, he says, you need information, and particularly if it's a new situation. If your mind is, if the mind is calm and seeing clearly, but there's no information, he says, then you need to make the effort to gather some information. Once you have the required information, he says, and the mind is clear, the mind will see clearly with that information what needs to be done. See, Adler says he's noticed himself, whenever he goes to a new place, his mind starts looking around. Because he's not familiar with the place. He starts to look for where the toilet is, where the exits are, where who lives. He says, once the mind is familiar, then it knows, okay, now I can go around this place, you know. If we don't know enough, if we don't have enough information, the mind feels agitated, feels insecure.
Does he say, sorry.
I thought about specific example.
Yeah.
Even if I feel that I'm not afraid, if someone breaks a trust repeatedly,
yeah,
and as an information or experience, I know that person
is
not trustworthy.
Yes.
But what about next time or next time? It's always new.
So, what do you mean? To example, to be chance is that, kuwa, a tree jong ya, kuti ni di luo se chalum ya, tu long malu piao ni malu, di lom yo kana kana di information ya kuya, tapi pita tree jong dah ya, atin mahau la re, kalau pita tree jong dah ma, atin soi kuwa di luo cip ro, tu se chatin la, se macatin la, kuwa. Same child, so you know, judgment looked at home.
Just look at home. That pet and shit, this is a pet and shit. You knew what you were looking at. You must be young at some to cook you, the Zodia, John Machine, and you must be young, you so did not have a.
He says, when someone has repeatedly done something, you must recognize that mind is a pattern, mind is a habit pattern. So we don't look at the person, we look at the mind. This mind always breaks promises or agreements. Yeah, he says if there is no reason or no condition for this mind to be different. This mind will continue to behave in the same way. So that is the with you have the information. So without prejudice to the person, recognizing that this is the tendency of this mind, then you need to make a decision based on the understanding you have. And check in the moment whether there's other circumstances that might suggest there are conditions that might make this mind do it differently. And if not, then you have to make a decision based on that.
No, but they don't mind.
The police, yeah, he says, they look at the signs of a crime, the clues, you know, and the modus operandi, you know, as you and they can make a very strong guess as to who it is, and they'll go and apprehend all those people, you know, regardless of whether they have evidence and all that. They'll go out and get all these people and then start checking what they were doing in those days, right? Because that's what the mind does. It does what it's used to doing.
But at the same time, probably everyone must know better than me, but the Aborigine people
yes.
here are caught without doing anything bad by police a lot more. So that's between wisdom and
judgment. Yeah, thought you are right. Dilomioni ma charole re. Dilomhita de liupama di ma turo bale huang lumio.
Mon
lumio lo kona.
Ba,
aborigineria huali, dia lu. Hala mo. Dia yo ya lu re.
Meet
it. Meet it. So he says, yes, of course it can lead to error, but because I hesitate to say this, history may have shown a track record of actual statistics that these people are more like maybe 80% of these people are likely to be involved in crime, and 20% of other people are likely to be involved in crime. So if someone of the 20% of them is standing around, they'll be arrested because of the actions of the other 80%. And then hopefully the police then look into the details and the possibilities and then you know, check whether it's, you know, it's true or not.
So idea yeah.
So people work out of ideas,
you know.
He says we can't work without ideas, without our preconceived ideas and so-called judgments. He says even if we sit still, we can't help some idea, either a neutral idea.
I'm about to lose about an idea.
Yeah, to not do anything is an idea. You know, we can't function without them. So we have to use them wisely. Yes,
something he said yesterday about his teaching, about how he could listen.
On the
back, flexible.
Yeah.
Right? And at the same time, I know Utejini has said about certain people, about not having the ability to compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Is what he's talked about just now, is that the same influence of mind, that the mind becomes so encrusted, so hard, that it does not have the ability to compromise anymore? Or is that the same sort of thing?
Which
he said that before about the tendency of the mind, you know, there's these tendencies. There is this strong tendency. And I know in previous conversations, he said, you know, he can't compromise.
He can't compromise.
No, no, not
there
him.
Are people who can't compromise.
Yeah.
There are people who have difficulty compromising.
Right. People have difficulty compromising.
Compromise or Kornen de Jala and Shara. Compromise Assim que ela mudava o Nobel, ela mudava o Elumio, era compromisso. A minha também não me deu pena, não tinha nada de não ler.
So, what do you
It's that same. I've heard you say about certain.
The
right? Where you.
So some people.
Where we've had a conversation and you said, you know, he can't compromise.
Yes, so some people are. Some people are flexible and some people are cannot compromise. Okay, so. But what is it that you are saying? Which quality of mind are you pointing to when you say
that? That's what I'm trying to understand. If on the path you're going along and able to.
If on the path. Right?
If you're on this.
Path.
This trip,
yes.
On this dream, and you're able to see and understand more, then sort of like at any time, any moment, every moment is new. And I've never quite thought of it. Help me out here trying to verbalize this because there are certain people that are very rigid and are unable to compromise on.
Every moment is new purely. You are not doing many of your little women. I say 100% that, oh, dear, I say more than a little bit. Say, Diana, a tip in me.
Better
as you are through it.
I don't know.
I don't know if this answers your question, but just your questioning brings this to mind. You mentioned about every moment being new. Although the moment is new and the mind is new as the reality.
Object is new, reality is new.
But it doesn't not have a history. So every moment is new, but every moment is a legacy of the past. Because it's cause and effect. So it's new in the sense that this is a brand new mind that has arisen, but it's still holding everything. Everything it is now is born from the old mind. Is reborn from the old mind. It may have one or two things added in the next moment. So that's how we can, you know, make our practice stronger, right? That's how the Buddha becomes the Buddha, because he gathers all these, you know, he puts in this practice over eons that, and because that power is growing and growing in the mind, but every mind is new. Every mind is new, but it's not empty. New doesn't mean it's empty with potential to be everything again, but new means it's brought everything in from the past, and it has the potential to be everything, but how do you use that for the next moment? Right? And it's got all the old habits, conditionings, good and bad already. Some of you know Pali, so you'll understand. There's two kinds, another two kinds of wrong view is the Oseda, Uchida Deti, and there's Sasada Deti. The belief that this life is it and it's over, and the belief that like heaven is forever. Yeah. So believing that it will go on and on and on, or believing that once it ends and it's over. So Buddha is somewhere between the two. When one mind is finished, it's finished, it's over. But there's a cause and effect chain. And so long as the conditions for the chain to link one more time, another new mind is born. It's new, as in this particular mind has never been born before, but it's it's born from the old, and so it carries everything from the old with the potential to be more. And because through this string of chain, you know, this linking chains, the idea, you know, the first mind thinks it is me, and it passes this thought on to the next mind. So the next mind thinks it's me, and it passes it on to the next mind, thinks it's me. And because it's a chain, and because there's no condition for that chain to stop, that chain has been going on for so long that we think it's me. We think this process of mind that has...
Next life after me.
So that's what
then we think
there's a spirit.
Yeah.
There are people who think of it as, you know, after this life it's over, and they say, next life it's another person. Because I don't know who was there in the last life.
That's right.
Next life is another person. Let that person suck out me what I want to do.
So my question is, to clarify, you've helped me.
Okay.
As you go further along with your meditation practice, you should therefore become more and more flexible in terms of less and less entrenched, more able to compromise.
That's dangerous. I think, what does it mean by compromise, right? I said to Seattle, what about people who know so well that something should be done a certain way to get it right? Somebody else doesn't know and wants to do it differently, and they insist on doing it this way. Of course, if there's great understanding that things are as they are, or everything will be as it, you know, whatever it is, then they might say, okay, you really want to do it, and then, you know, they just pick up the pieces. Or there's so many levels of compromising, right? He says they have wisdom, they'll try their best to explain or whatever, and then maybe let it go if it can't be done. They will do what they need to do to fulfill their duty without an expectation that the result will be perfect. The result you can't do anything about. You just do your best.
It's an attachment to ideas, isn't it? The lack of compromise is because of attachment to ideas.
Compromise below the who idea of
attachment. Very difficult. Yeah.
Just connected to one of the previous questions, in relation to the development of a relationship from a student to a teacher.
Yes.
Not so much in the Theravada, but some years ago, the Dalai Lama called a worldwide conference and sent teachers all over the world, Australia, all over, and interviewed many Sangha groups, our group, many Sangha groups, and asked each individual, what is ethics in Sangha? What is ethics in Sangha?
Yeah.
Because there were so many new Western teachers, and sometimes they were caught in elevated states, caught in defilement, caught in arrogance, abuse of power, abuse of sexuality was a big one, and it caused a huge problem in the Dharma, and the Dalai Lama tried to get opinions from students and then get the teachers together to have a code of ethics. And recently he said that Western students should be very, very careful and very slow to take on the devotional guru because they don't really understand.
Yes.
Treat a teacher with more respect like a university teacher.
Correct.
But the relationship is quite difficult for a Westerner. That's sort of our question.
What do you mean, the relationship?
Well, the relationship, how a student can develop a good wholesome relationship with a teacher, because some teachers, not this teacher, not this tradition, some teachers come from a tradition where the teacher is never questioned.
Yeah.
It becomes difficult.
Yeah. when Gary was speaking and all of us are listening, he says, are we aware that we're listening, or we're very involved in hearing what he's saying?
That
we can listen, but we must recognize that we're listening. That's called apamada. Not forgetting. Not forgetting to be in the moment. Of your relationship. Okay, maybe I'll just tell you what Seattle said first, and then I'll come back to Gary's question to Seattle. Seattle was just talking about a monk who had been in Sri Lankan with him. This student had this monk had been with Seattle about Sadhana. For quite a few years, maybe 6-7 years. The monk attended to Seattle, stayed with him all the time, sat beside him a lot. He said to the teacher many years later, I think maybe after Seattle passed away, that Sherman Seattle never taught him anything actively. And he said, well, he is very curious and he's very vocal, so he asks questions. If you ask a question, his teacher will tell you the answer. His teacher will explain things, you know, expand on things and so on. This monk sat with his teacher, but he never asked a question. He just sits there. So he only learns from what he sees Seattle or hears from Seattle, you know, talking. But he never learned anything directly. Like, he never said to Seattle, I have this experience, and this experience, what is it like, and, you know, that sort of thing. So it's also about knowing how to receive from the teacher. His teacher doesn't offer information. He waits for you to ask. If you want to, he will not, you know, impose himself on you, so to speak, his teacher. He thinks his teacher is like a drum. When you beat the drum, you will hear the sound. Sometimes he's so curious. He said, his teacher's walking, he'll go up and say, Seattle, what are you doing? What are you being aware of? The best sia sasambuma dilo pya pya mu le phit da bo le ero dalai lama lai ye ho chou sa da bo naw tu a da da le a kon lo sun naw tu da di pe le a naw nai ga the best le bo le sia a paw ma a lo chi ku ko ma ba ma pi ma so yin lu le ya ko kwe le ko kwe le sia
ဲ့နောက်နိုင်ငံသူတွေကိုကိုွယ်တယ်ဆိုတာနားမလည်ဘူးလေအကိုမကွယ်ပါနဲ့တဲ့ဆရာတွေကိုရိုးသေတာပဲ
နောက်ရိုးသေတာဟို high tech ကြီးအညီလုံးနဲ့ထဲရ
တာဒါပေမဲ့စัจကျင်ဘက်မှာကြတော့တချို့ဆရာတွေကဟိုသူတို့အာရှတိုက်ကနေလာပြီးတော့သူတို့မှာသူတို့မှနဲ့သူတို့ကဘလို့ထင်လဲဆိုတော့ငါဆရာနောက်ဖြစ်
နား
ထောင်မယ်အဲ့မှာကြတော့ conflict ဖြစ်တာပေါ့လေအဲ့ဒါဦးစင်
นั่นเนี่ยก็ได้แต่อย่างงาเสียเอาไว้เลยเสียเอาเลยแต่ว่ามันทําว่าโหแล้วก็เข้าถึงเลยเ
สีย versus it's true there is this conflict you know teacher student relationships when there's no wisdom on the part of the student or no wisdom on the part of the teacher so that's why he doesn't want to be a teacher he thinks of himself
not true no
share
la ba chi share la ba chi
honestly very simple yeah
ko ti da le ko
jan
pyo le
share lo
de ba le yeah whatever he knows he
shares he has no wish to impose his views on you and like this is right and you must
do jo chi le pyo lo lai nai sat pyo le lai ma nai lo pyo lo
ba le yeah he'll give you what he thinks is you know what about his practice if you like it he'll tell you more if you don't like it okay you can leave it
That's okay. Yeah. So almost every question Sayadaw answers, he uses wisdom, the word wisdom. Yeah. Not everyone, but almost.
Almost.
And you said something about wisdom before with regard to defilements, that as defilements succeed, wisdom arises. That brings a question to my mind. Does that mean that in every mind is an inherent wisdom that is only hindered by the defilements? Like, we're kind of born with this wisdom. Every mind has wisdom just always, and it's blocked by these defilements, and we reduce defilements, and the wisdom arises?
Yeah. အဲ့တော့ကိလေသာနည်းလိုက်အဲ့ညာကဖို့ဖြိုးလာနိုင်တယ်အဲ့လိုမျိုးလား
တတိရှိတယ
် Yes
တတိရှိနေစိတ်မှာအများအားရှင်တယ်ဆိုတော့ဒါကြောင့်တတိကိုအများအားချနေတယ်တတိတမန်ရှိနေလို့အများကအချိန်မြင့်ဖြစ်တယ
်ခွဲ in every mind there is the potential for all wisdom to flower when the defilements are reduced in that mind and sati is present because sati is a pre requisite for wisdom to arise. Because in Abhidhamma, all the jnana minds are called sati samyutta, with sati. Without sati, you don't have the jnana minds. So that's why when we can maintain sati and samadhi, because samadhi suggests that the defilements are weak.
So
when all the five faculties, you know, the sati, the samadhi, the virya, the sadda,
panya
meaning in this sense what you know in order to practice, yeah. So when you put all that panya together and whatever theory you have as well, he says, when you put that together and then the defilements are less and it keeps going, that the potential wisdom that is there has the space to flower. So then it can slowly grow.
Right. There's always a potential wisdom.
Always blooming.
Then Moli, same time, you know,
Yes.
It is also an anusya. Yes. It's just not strong. So we're just cultivating that.
I find that when I sit to formal meditation, often drowsiness comes very quickly. It's a bit better if I keep my eyes open now. But I'm wondering whether it's better to mainly do walking when I want to do formal practice, rather than forcing myself to just confront the question.
So tying it may end like that. Yes, it's quite a nice thought.
Yeah.
I don't know. You are too. formal approach in that way. That what to, lambe po shout up po makau la re. Basura. Whatever makes you more alert is better. And then when you feel better from your walking, you feel more sort of elasticity in your awareness and all that. You can test yourself on the cushion and investigate. Maybe you're more alert now. You can then investigate what got into the mind that made it sleepy. Yeah, when the mind is sleepy, it means that the wirya, you know, there was something. The mind is not working properly, not interested. Yeah. If the mind can work, you know, it won't get sleepy. That's why Sierra says always to watch the mind that is aware. That's the mind that's working to do the meditation, right? So, because if we don't watch it, we don't know whether it's really doing its work, what is it like when it's doing its work, and then he says, we don't know, so we think it's doing its work, but it's not doing its work, we kind of think, and then we're not really sure, and then it stops working, and then, you know, yeah. If we eat too much, we get sleepy. If we
too much
effort to be aware, we run out of energy and then cannot put in any more virya and the mind becomes sleepy. And we lack interest. Lack of interest shows a lack of wisdom brought to the practice. Lack of skillful means, basically. You're not really interested in the process. Yeah. If you're really interested in what's happening, you know, he says 1 hour can just feel like a few minutes.
I've noticed that it happens almost within a few minutes of sitting.
Too much quietness. He said, even if he looks at your normal movements around the place, you're walking real slowly in samadhi.
You like the quietness, you like it too much.
So.
too much samadhi, wisdom, effort. So
samadhi is not enough wisdom, not enough virya, so in the sitting of course it just goes off. So you might want to walk fast. Maybe it's your personality as well. Maybe you're generally calm. You're not excited. So only when you do things a bit more energetically, you know, the mind is more awake. So the moment you sit, it's calm.
So
even in walking and all that, make sure you watch the mind that's aware.
Yes.
Check, is it working? How is it working? How is it aware? You know, yeah, keep an eye on it. See whether it's energetic. And then remember to realize that with your eyes open, there's that object as well. He said the best thing would be if we had a swimming pool. Swimming meditation. Because if you swim slowly, you'll keep moving.
He always
has this dream of making the monastery into a kind of factory. So yogis have to do, like, they have a job, not just your little yogi job, but a job. Like you're an assembly line worker, or maybe you have a project to do and you have to be mindful. That's your mindfulness practice, you have to do this and you have It's very natural. The mind has a job to do, an actual job, and then it has to bring in mindfulness. So the mind is really busy because it has to try very hard to do more. That's his personality. He likes to have something to do. He's a
He always liked doing two things at the same time. Like he always had the radio on to study, or you know, he always had two things happening at the same time, if possible. He says the mind is really fast. He said we can drive, listen to the radio, talk on the phone, and be eating. We can do it.
Yes. What about the Zen saying that says just when you're chopping, you just chop?
Zen ba, chop no pe chima, chop pe lo, era jara ore. Yes, but you must be aware you're chopping.
Yes.
Oh.
But you're not
chopping. Chop no mo le se ka tu, chop no mo le se ka lo lo ba ma ni. Chop lo ma,
he says to chop, even in the chopping. He says, the mind is not only aware, the mind decides where to chop, how to chop, how thin, how fast. This sideways, square on, this way, you know, all sorts of things.
But not listening to the radio at the same time.
Why not? What he wants to say is that the mind has so much potential. It has the ability to be so encompassing. We should not underestimate the mind. Limit ourselves with our belief that the mind cannot do something. Don't
limit up.
He says in a restaurant, as a metaphor for the mind, in a restaurant, he says the manager will stand at his desk and watch everything. He says the waiters will run around and do what they do. The customers will come and sit or make their orders and eat. The cooks will cook. The dishwashers will wash. Everybody's doing their own jobs. But they all carry on. And everything happens seamlessly. Because they each do their own, what they have to do.
Nature's
like that.
All
the minds do their own work. The eye, you know, the When we're not familiar, he says, then we go in and investigate. We're curious. Oh, knowing mind works like this, you know, it's painful.
Oh, this is a knowing mind. Oh, knowing mind do this.
And then, other minds, you know, like wanting mind does this, when the mind feels, it will feel.
Memory does
its work, perception does its work. You know, all these different parts of the mind, they all do their work. And in the beginning, we will take them each out and say, oh, this is perception of the world. This was the mind making judgment. That was perception. And this was mind doing this. That was feeling. And this and this and this and this. And we try to get familiar with each of them. After a while, you can step away and just go. Then all of them did that. So when the wisdom becomes skillful at recognizing and understanding all of these things are at work, it then steps away and it just knows. Once in a while, if I want to go back in closer, check whether awareness is doing its work or how perception did its work or something like that, but most of the time we can step back and just say, oh yes, everybody is just working seamlessly. When we don't understand, yes, we must do that. Go in and look at each of them. Understand how that function works.
The Buddha, when he was talking to Rupa Parahans,
has
told him that they should continue being mindful. Now, these are fully enlightened beings.
Yes.
So what was the point?
Yes,
Yeah, he says there is nothing else for the mind to do. I mean, you're enlightened. He says they could do a myriad of things. I mean, I think maybe he says it was... He said, I mean, even if they don't want to practice, the mind is already in that mode of knowing everything as reality. So, you know, they cannot be this thing. But it's just like, I don't know why. But he said, they did want to do things like remain in Nirodha Samabhatti for months and stuff like that. And the Buddha said, no. He said, you must have your meal once a day. You must meet with people. Okay. They would, you know, dry the rice, stay in Samabhatti 7 days, wake up, put some water in the rice, eat it, and then go back into Samabhatti. He hasn't heard that he told the arahants to practice as such. He has heard his teacher say that Buddha said, even if you're an anagami, don't stop. That's it. Go to the end. Did you have anything more to say?
In my previous practice, I always used to use the object, but Sayadaw is saying not to use the object.
How do you use the object?
Well, not to choose an object.
To choose an object, okay.
Right. But sometimes I find I need to choose an object to maintain mindfulness, to avoid torpor.
You can choose an object. Skillful means. When the mind is not able to naturally choose its own object, you have to make the mind choose an object. Yep.
Otherwise you just get lost.
And torpor, like you said, sleepiness. Some people do it this way. They use a main object, build up the awareness and the clarity. When they feel very clear and aware, then they let go gently of the main object and see what else. And then you still maintain some awareness of the main object, but then other things become clearer as well. So there's a big view. In the Czech Republic, this yogi was, you know, watching an object, and then he saw a thought. And then he said, should he look at the thought? And so I said, no, don't look at the thought. You already know it. You know, because once you do that, there's a bit more energy, and then the thought will stop. So you already know it, just maintain it like that. You're in the right When you're in the right balance, you might be looking at something, but you know other things. They impinge on your awareness. The main object keeps the mind energized, and that energy allows you to also then receive all the other senses. What Siano is concerned about is that people thinking when they come to the stage where they're aware of the main object and other objects, they think their mind is distracted. And then they try harder and harder to focus on the one object to try and block out the others because they think they shouldn't know other things. And this is what Siano wants to say. At that point, it's fine. The mind is in a balanced state. It is knowing things. You're not distracted. You're just knowing more things.
Ability to know.
So it means that the ability to know
Awareness has
expanded. We have a strange misconception, I think, that, you know, we need to keep the mind on one object for the samadhi to be strong. And this is what Sarah was trying to say. It's not really so true.
I don't mean my name.
So if even with the using one object, he says if we're doing it right, it should get to the point where we're sort of like, the mindfulness is expanded, we know the main object and other objects, and you know we feel clear and like we have a broad view. He says, but the problem is we often take one object and then we just get sort of sunk into the object. We never sort of come out of the object and just know. Yeah. Yes.
What about observing the observing mind?
Mm. Yeah, well, that's it.
That state where you feel there's a broader view, you can sense that there's something that is aware, and that's the watching mind. The other day, Siana said, I don't know what it was this week, he said, if you see two objects, there's three. Yeah, because of this group. So, yeah. So
on that is ringing in the ears.
You've got ringing in the ears.
So, I mean, that's like an object as well.
Yeah.
So, that's sometimes when I concentrate on that. Or this week,
yes.
I've used it as an observation.
Yes.
And
do you like the ringing?
So much. Like,
do you like the ringing in your ears?
No. It's never really bothered me too much until this week.
Until you took it as an object.
And so I'm kind of semi-struggling, using it as an object, trying to let it go. I'm kind of coping, but if there's anything that could be said, I'll be helpful.
But then,
Narama Kam
Chara, you want to get an amish about it? Did you want to? I know you want to use a lot. When you don't like an object, don't make it an object.
Don't use a meditation object. Resistance in liking or disliking to the same object, this object should not get the meditation object. First, you take care of your liking or disliking first.
Okay.
If you're neutral, then you can use any object.
Feelings.
Yeah.
Aversion. Yeah, greed.
But sometimes if it's okay. No?
Sometimes you're not reacting, it's okay.
Yeah.
The reaction is the problem, right?
So when you have a reaction to an object,
that's right.
So that object is no longer a Dhamma object for you because it's an aversion object an attachment object. You know, it's not a neutral object anymore. So that's why you shouldn't observe the object directly anymore.
Right, and then be aware of that aversion.
Yes,
you have the aversion.
And change the attitude. Idea of Libya.
Change the idea as well.
Yeah.
The Baba, but it's
not a problem.
Is aversion or greed operating no matter what object you're looking at?
Mm-hmm.
No. Lobha dodha ayo be ayo lobhi ange anu lobha da la.
Nalunde mai ayo du lobha ba.
When there's wrong view, greed and aversion can come.
Wrong thoughts.
Just when looking, I found that if I look, I wasn't sure how to do looking meditation thing, but if I look from the back of the head, like it seems like the vision is coming from here, it seems more relaxed and more aware than looking in the front of my head. Is that a technique?
Yeah, tua mienao tibo. Tua di kau nau kan di chin ni, lalu saya kata mama, era soal tua ti ni lah lembu ni, dah macam tua di ngasi ya di chin ni, soal tua tebro ti ya mau benda lupa ni, dah elu tau ni apa. However you use it, so long as it makes you feel that you're aware, that's good. Yeah. And then slowly you won't need to use the technique once you get familiar with the sense. Because we never look with our eyes, do we? We look with our mind.
Meditation is not I walk, really.
More sort of not out there, not grabbing something, it just seems more passive.
That's right.
He said that's good.
If we don't use an object that we like or dislike, when things like
we don't use objects that we like or dislike.
Yeah, he was saying, you know, like if there's an object like the ringing in the ears and you don't like it, don't use it.
Yeah.
But when something emerges like fear or greed or something, you know, that's an object of aversion, or but there was something about looking at the greed or looking at the fear. But what you're saying is don't take that as an object.
No, there's the object, which is Ayon Peter Singness.
Sorry, mind
defilements. So there's the defilement that arises in the mind, and you can observe it. Like anger arises in the mind, anger is the object, right? What he's asking you to, like he asked you to watch out for, is the same. So whether the object is anger or ringing in the ears, then you have to check whether there is an aversion to having this object or experience. So do you like the ringing in the ears? Do you like anger? And that is in the watching mind. That's what he wants you to watch out for. Sometimes it can be get quite like into a cycle, you know. You don't like having wrong attitude, and you try to watch that with the wrong attitude because you want it to go. Then you really have to stop and take stock. You know, you don't keep meditating. Yeah, you don't keep observing anymore. You have to stop and think about it, what you should do before you continue. Yeah, then you have to start with something completely neutral, you know, something that is not going to agitate the mind. You start with something else.
I mean, that, but look, it's new, right?
Yeah, it's like quicksand then, you know, the more you do, the more you sink. Yeah, you move a bit, you sink a lot, so just don't go there. Yeah, just stay still.
But sometimes you can observe dosa.
Yes.
With a non-immersive.
Correct, you can. That's what he's saying.
And that's when it really starts to come clear.
So when we're not looking through colored glasses, then we can do it, anything. Then we can watch any object. Yes. Yes.
Saito was saying the other day, one of the impetuses for practice was suffering, like in his experience. And somebody else mentioned that if there wasn't so much suffering, what's the impetus for practice? And I think the answer was around energetic and an urgency. I was just actually wondering what the urgency is.
Spiritual urgency.
บ่อันนี้ยีนี่ก็สิ้นซ้ําไม่ได้นะว่าแต่ยีได้ที่ขึ้นมาตัวตัวรูปปัตตานเนี่ยอาการอันนี้สัตว์ก็ได้อาก้าวล่ะมีส่วนนี้ตัวดีไลฟ์ของตัวตอนนั้นเนี่ยเนเนสิ้นซ้ําได้มั้ยไอ้เฉยเนี่ยอาจจะเสียตัดมั้ย
If we don't have suffering in our lives, it's still possible for the sense of spiritual urgency to arise out of the knowledge and the wisdom that comes from the practice itself. So we might be practicing for other mundane reasons, because we like the practice or stuff like that. And just because we are sincerely practicing, insights come to us. And those insights then give us a kickstart. You know, something one day hits us and we just feel it's really important. Yes, any insight into the nature of impermanence or dukkha or anatta can give rise to a strong sense of urgency as well.
Because sometimes when you have just even very small, what's an ordinary kind of insights, you do get the sense that this is worthwhile, the practice makes sense, and so forth.
Yes.
But you also get a sense of this is unfolding as it will, sort of thing.
Yeah.
You kind of
can't rush it.
Yeah, you can't sort of
These are understandings about the nature of practice, and so you just plot on. He says he just wants us to practice until there's some momentum so that we can rush. Now we just haven't gained the momentum.
Start again. Never finish.